And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. Time is 2 p.m. Up next, the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. We're in such a highly fluctuating field, it is wonderful to cahoot together, and I have our splendiferous guest, Diane Frank, for the first segment of our show, whom I will bring on in moments that we may spiral love blessings out into a too hot and too unkind world. But first, here we are, more than perfectly, the Moon and Pluto are conjoined, Moon in Capricorn, according to Daniel Giammario, and if it's not true, let's make it true. He says the originating impulse for the Moon in Capricorn symbol was the Council of Wise Women dedicated to the next seven generations. May it be so. And part of late-breaking ancient news kinship, I love discovery of rock art shows Neanderthals were artistic. You know, lines, art, rock in cave near southwestern tip of Europe, you know, prove that those species that we have dissed are actually our cultural and artistic equals. Yes, it's inside Gorham's Cave in Gibraltar. I probably walked over that. And it says, you know, clearly, he says the rock art, you know, again, the study are engravings made with great effort for ritual purposes to communicate with others and between worlds. May it be the purpose of all art as well. So just a little bit of forementioning. I will be cahooting with splendiferous allies, Climbing Poetry, Alixa Garcia and Naima Penniman. They will be my accompanists at the, you know, astro-mythological talk at Bioneers Friday, October 17th at 9 p.m. But then we are doing our own experimental cahooting, Climbing Poetry and me, Caroline Casey, on Tuesday, October 21st, 7 p.m. at Hub Oakland, or as they like to call it, Impact Hub Oakland. Oh, Impact. Well, okay. Their website is oakland.impacthub.net. And wonderful allies there, Kanda and Ashara, hello, said if you could mention the OMI Gallery at Hub Oakland. We are hosting our first Friday Art Murmur tomorrow, and have opening reception for InterGen Women Citizen Artist Expressions. May everyone go, maybe even our guest Diane Frank, an intergenerational exhibit curated by the Women's Environmental Artists Director up through September 26th. The opening is Friday, September 5th, 7 to 10 p.m., free and open to the public. Thank you, Ashara and Kanda, past, present, future allies. So last week, you know, we had Samara and Jarvis Masters by Proxy. Again, the power of love emerging from, you know, pain and suffering and dedication. Next week, on September 11th, more than perfectly, I'll be hosting Gar Alperovitz and Georgia Kelly for the Praxis Conference on the Economics of Sustainability. On September 18th, Ray Abilea, you know, for the Climate Mojo New York City Equinox event that is brewing there. So, there we have it. Today, we are dedicated to Earth Eros. Yes. Love and gardening, composting colonialism into life nutrient for all beings. May it be so. So we welcome at the top of the hour for the first half, Diane Frank, author of the fantabulous Blackberries in the Dream House, a really smoldery, sizzly, erotic novel that I quite loved, and her most recent work, The Yoga of the Impossible. We will then at the half hour segue to Cassandra Ferreira, constellator of community, frequent cahooter, and Rachel Kaplan, author of Urban Homesteading, and the course they have conjured for women permaculture. And we go, Isis, may Isis, the goddess of nature, be honored in all forms. So welcome, Diane Frank. There you are in our KBFA studios.
Hi, Caroline. I am really happy to be here with you.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. So let's engage in you know, again, part of the originating impulse for your book, The Yoga of the Impossible, you know, to and fro, and feel free to go anywhere you want to go, but to spiral forth blessings. And just as a little footnote, I was reading, World's End, a kind of poisonous novel about colonialism by T. Corizian Boyle, going, ugh, that starts in upstate New York with Marxists and all kinds of things. And I was going, boy, that was tough. And then I picked up your book, which starts kind of in the same place, upstate New York, but it's sweet. And I go, oh, sweetness for the harshness. There we go. Yes, it's your book is kind of a Valentine to San Francisco. It implies and delineates that the San Francisco Bay Area is awash with fantabulous, desirable men. I mean, that's part of your narrative, right?
Men and women, whatever your gender preference is, you can find it here. And
there you go.
Yeah. And the thing I love about San Francisco is it's a place where you can really be yourself without asking permission, without offending people. And it's a place that you can create a life in tune with your soul and create your life as an art form, which is what the main character does in the book. And it's what I try to do with my own life.
And yes, life as art form. Ah, yeah. Yes, yes.
And I'd like to tell you how this book came into being. On my book tour with Blackberries in the Dream House, I danced my way across the United States. I was hosted by friends in the dance gypsy community, and I never paid for a motel room or rented a car. At that time, I was single. I had a lot of love in my heart and needed to express it. I knew I had a soulmate, even though there was no visible sign, even though my friends thought it would take an act of God. And writing this book was my way of expressing what I knew. I always like to begin my novels with the main character, in this case, a gypsy sculptor named Katerina, speaking as an adult in her full power. So if you like, I could read you the first chapter.
First chapter. How long is the first chapter?
It is a page and a half, or we could go on to something else.
No. If you feel that that is a great way to go, then yes, feel free.
I would love to do that. So this is chapter one of Yoga of the Impossible. His emotions were slippery, like an avocado. It rained between conversations. We were in a cafe on Judah, close to the beach, where sand dollars pile up after the low tide. We sat by the window waiting for breakfast. Avocados and eggs before a journey into the underworld. When the rain stopped, the light turned green at the corner, reflecting on the puddled streetcar tracks. I'll be keeping the light on inside for you, he said. I told him, I'll remember that, whispering to myself, table crumbs, wanting to slide my hands inside his shirt. He paid for my omelet, which is a signal in this part of the country. He said he'd been painting all morning and ranted about what the fumes do to your nose. I could see it, green paint on the hairs inside his nostrils. On Friday night, he kissed me on the street, gave the half-Japanese man $2 to buy himself a beer and go away. We talked about how strippers in West Palm Beach are like the geishas in Kyoto. He told me men like to give their power to these women and let the woman be in charge. I told him about the no actor in Kyoto who thought I was a geisha. He took me out for tea late at night, which is expensive because he needed to tell his secrets to a stranger, someone he'd never see again. American men don't tell you what they mean. They give signals. They think about seducing you in airplanes, but pretend they don't care. They don't tell you the truth until you are gone. Later that night, we walked on the beach. I found a slice of a nautilus shell, the fractal spiraling to the edge of my emotions. We stepped over a pile of sand dollar fossils, etched orbits of the pentagram, pressed to stone between sand. I wanted to put my nose against his skin. Then my lips. I remember the night in San Francisco when we went to Ebisu for sushi and got a little drunk on sake. That was my first signal. The wind was blowing fog from the Pacific Ocean, swirling around a telephone booth in the inner sunset. We tangled around each other on the streetcar and loved each other for hours that night. His plane leaves at 6 o'clock in the morning. I let the hug he gives me imprint like oak leaves, bamboo over a koi pond, his eyes, eggshell blue, full of messages, my emotions, spider webs on leaves tearing apart. And what does it mean to have a man inside you? I act like Scheherazade. I tell him stories.
Yes. So your novel, The Yoga of the Impossible, it's a journey, really, about intimacy, to find equality, because you just read, you know, American men don't tell you what they mean, but wait, you found your true beloved, who's an American guy, right?
I mean, I certainly did.
An open secret. So it's not all, nor is it always true, and why don't you tell our team again when you will be at Open Secret in San Rafael, with your beloved Eric Iverson playing beautiful music and you're presenting beautiful words.
Yes, it's with Eric Ivins from Stringfire, and I'll be at Open Secret on Friday, September 12th at 7 p.m., that's in San Rafael, and I'll be at Bookshop West Portal in San Francisco on Tuesday, September 9th at 7. And both places, Eric will be playing and weaving melodies on the cello that match the language.
That's beautiful. Yes, I apologize. Eric Ivins. Yes, excuse me. Wonderful. And cahooting. And then if we take this journey of intimacy, I mean, I view this book in a way as kind of like a prequel to Blackberry, in some ways. And I do love out there in the world in myriad quirky forms, the increasing availability of the erotically self-possessed woman arising into collective culture. Have you ever seen the Miss Fisher Mysteries, by the way?
I haven't, but you've never given me a bad steer. I'll check it out.
Okay, right. Well, you might. I found them a little arch at first, and now I go, I love them. Set in 1910-20s Australia on BBS, and available at Netflix. But they're quite, you know, again, quite fabulously self-possessed woman, erotically self-possessed. I think you will find it kinned, because there is a great love with whom she does a long and complex and kind of chaste dance, and meanwhile has all kinds of interesting men on the side in an unconfirmed, afflicted and happy way. And we go, yeah, well, I mean, because that's kind of what you're animating, right? I mean, your character, is looking for, you know, soulmate, is this the one? No, is this the one? No, is this the one? No, we'll dance for a while, though, and then on the way there. So is it the journey of the erotically self-possessed woman slowly becoming intimate with world?
Oh, absolutely, and I think you need to honor the journey. And the other thing about novels is I strongly feel that a novel is a magic spell, and I take responsibility for where I leave the reader at the end of the book. The novel could have ended one of two ways, and I decided to let my life inform the journey, so people will find out at the end of the book.
Well, they are going to Japan.
Absolutely.
Right?
There's you can view the characters in each of these books as highly, highly kindred souls. It's a different time, a different place, a different culture, but they're on a similar journey.
Well, and let's do the journey of Venus, and Venus is squaring Mars right this moment. So how do we integrate, you know, outward show and inward, you know, authentic eros? But you know, in the chapter you just read, you know, his plane leaves at 6 o'clock in the morning, and there we go. A classic kind of part of our collective dream, you know, is if we grow up and go, either we can have relationship or freedom, from, you know, casting our gaze around at the possibilities, and then it goes blah, 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 into the unconscious. And so people are like, you're leaving for Hong Kong at 6 the next morning. I'm very attracted. Because then relationship does not jeopardize freedom, but that leaves Venus very sad. It leaves Uranus, the trickster freedom, very happy, like, I escaped a prison. But Venus goes, boo-hoo. So it's kind of the journey from, the journey of, how do we become equals and dance in an equal, sizzly way so that we can have relationship and authentic spirited self, right?
Absolutely. And that first chapter is where it starts. She goes through all sorts of transformations and ends in a much deeper, totally powerful place where love and freedom are dancing on the same page and in the same soul.
Oh, that's great. Okay, love and freedom. Well, this is a kind of, again, part of our composting colonialism and all its sneaky forms. There have been, inveigling reality police, sociological, whatever it is, that have revealed that Americans, feel that they are themselves to the degree to which they are out of relationship. And we go, Oh, it's Shane, it's John Wayne, it's the cowboy. Come back, Shane, And we go, that is a reality police snookering of which, you're dedicated life and your beautiful marriage and your book are a kind of antidote going, no, greater freedom through intimacy. I mean, not to make it, an advertising slogan, but so greater. And that is kind of the dynamic. But you say novel is a magic spell. What would you wish for all people who hear about this novel or read this novel or come to your event at Open Secret? What would be a fantabulous blessing you might want to animate for everybody who opens the pages of this book or who hears you read or is listening right now?
Well, here's my blessing. May everyone keep believing in themselves. May all soulmates meet. And may all of you keep listening to the truth of your soul. I don't think it matters what people are telling you on the outside. You keep listening to what you feel within in the deepest place, and that can become your life.
So there is much beautiful, great, yes, we take that, we spiral it out there into the memosphere, throughout the yoga of the impossible, the characters sometimes quote poetry and sometimes say, then we read a lot of Mary Oliver and Robert Bly and Mirabai and so on, So I'd suggested to you, the idea of, poetry poker, and the complexity of, so here's the idea of the soulmate, which you have written about, the character yearns for, and you have magnetized in your own actual life. Yes?
Oh, yes. Right?
Oh yes, okay. So that is a true story for you. And I go, soulmate, I wonder, it remains a mystery, but I will read more Diane Frank. But I wanted to add in, our buddy Robert Bly's Mirabai translation, just for the fun of it, to add in this to our mix. It is short enough. Why Mira can't come back to her old house. Remember, Mira is a traditional, she's in a traditional, let me see if I can find the thing here, but she's in, born in Rajasthan in 1498, and again in a traditional family, her in the village of Kudki, and she was a tiny girl, begged in early life from a visiting ascetic a small statue of Krishna and going, that's the guy for me. That's my soulmate. Sometimes our soulmates, I guess, are mythological. She married a man who then died, and in tradition, she was supposed to marry his brother, and she was like, no. In one poem, according to Bly, she mentions the sun sending her a cup of poison and later a poisonous snake, and she says, thank you very much. I put it around my neck and thanked him for the jewelry. So this kind of spicy attitude, but the last, poem, Why Mira Can't Come Back to Her Old House, the colors of the dark one have penetrated Mira's body. All the other colors washed out. Making love with the dark one and eating little, those are my pearls and my carnelians. Meditation beads and the forehead streak, those are my scarves and my rings. That's enough feminine wiles for me. My teacher taught me this. Approve me or disapprove me, I praise the mountain energy night and day. I take the path that ecstatic human beings have taken for centuries. I don't steal money. I don't hit anyone. What will you charge me with? I have felt the sway of the elephant's shoulders, and now you want me to climb on a jackass? Try to be serious. Anyway, it's very fun. So she is marrying herself by marrying, you know, an animated force of divine, erotic, spiritual intensity. And we go, okay, you know, like that. And then we could go, you know, Kabir or anything like that about the value of being in body, because very much your dedication is about, you know, like Kabir says, you know, what is found now is found then. If, you know, ooh, let me just, I guess, just through the little thing about the thing. And then your love of the sensual incarnational realm, and that art invites power into the world, into the body. Yes, Kabir saying the idea that the soul will join with the ecstatic just because the body is rotten, that is all fantasy. What is found now is found then. If you find nothing now, you will simply end up with an apartment in the city of death. That's a very fun line. So you love these things, right?
You have just quoted two of my favorite poems.
They're very wonderful. Well, they're back. Yeah, they're back to back in Robert Bly, so it's easy. But thank you, Robert. But yeah, they're really great. Well, they seem to inform your dedicated life and your life as art. And maybe we bring up Lilith. Possibly, I've just met all these interesting women whose names. Lilith. At first they thought it was sort of a curse, and now they embrace it, because Lilith was the original woman in the Bible who wanted to be equal, and she wanted to make love on top, and Adam complained, going, no! And so she got thrown out, and they made Eve out of his, you know, anyway, here we go. So Lilith is a friend of yours, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. And then the whole thing about the yoga of the impossible as a theme, it's a way of getting enlightened by exploring opposites and contradictions, including and especially the contradictions in your own life. And for some people, you know, meditate in a cave, but, you know, come out into the world and then it's all gone. Or you're so spiritual. Okay, keep that spirituality when you're in love. Keep that spirituality in a relationship. And that's a big part of what this book explores. You know, it's not about being spiritual in Yaya land. It's about being spiritual in your body.
Yes. And then how do you like to dance with the Mirabai poem? She goes, you know, forget, you know, custom, forget, you know, marriage, forget me obeying and marrying my brother-in-law just because my husband arranged marriage died. You know, I'm marrying the dark one. And I'm not, you know, I'm riding on an elephant. Thank you very much. You know, so how does that speak to you as we incarnate that into actually, like, you know, having a cup of coffee in the morning with somebody?
Well, I would say that someone could not possibly marry the brother of someone that they loved and married. I mean, that would be ridiculous. You know, it's about living with your soul and doing exactly what your soul tells you and ignoring all the other voices. So if you need to do some learning in love before you meet the soulmate, that's what you need to do, and do it proudly. And don't settle for anyone who you don't feel that intensely deep, wonderful, spiritual, musical, artistic connection, or whatever other souls need in terms of the way that they're living their life. So that would be my cup of tea. With lots of jasmine flowers in it.
But she's getting it on with the dark one, capital D, capital O. She's going, no, forget human men. You know, I'm getting it on with the dark one.
I think that's the basis of human love, is that, you know, that your love for the divine is there, you know, in your life, in your spiritual practice, in every aspect of your body. And then you express that in love on this planet with a real human being. And you know, like, some people are traveling solo, but just ecstatically in love with the divine, and that's fine. And other people express it in their lives in different ways. But I'm a real advocate of, you know, the dark one, the God goddess, the merging of dark and light, yin yang, every opposite, every contradiction, because beyond every opposite and contradiction, there's a unity that is larger than either side of it.
Yes. You know, and again, you know, these big crucial themes, you know, into which we are delving, you know, Venus and Pluto, and things, again, sometimes really not spoken of because they're only, they are operating on multiple levels. So, for instance, I remember, you know, talking to Bly and Robert Bly. Hello, Robert Bly, you great Kahooter, collaborator. And, years ago, and he said, you know, the study of myth, you know, is not just like some kind of nice thing, you know, or some hip hobby or some academic thing. It's essential for the health of relationships and family and culture. And he said, for instance, you know, in fairy tales, sometimes there's a theme in which the daughter is the keeper of the father's soul. You know, and if we don't have that fairy tale, a kind of ritualistic way of working it out, then all kinds of weird and kinky and horrible power abuse goes on in an unconscious way. And what I want to bring to you, part of the complexity, is sort of Venus and Pluto, the underworld sizzle that, you know, many very independent feminist women, you know, rah, 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 but they go, ooh, but we do want to be overwhelmed. We want to be overwhelmed by a kind of eroticism, and do we dare to confess this? And then there's all the kind of, you know, S&M and, you know, silk scarves and all kinds of stuff. And I want to pitch it to you as a big, interesting thing, you know. I think we want to be overwhelmed by the divine, okay, not by, like, a guy, right? I mean, isn't it a yearning for something so transcendent, and we fall into a mistake going, oh, you know, as opposed to, anyway, I just want to pass this huge complexity back to you, going, what do you think about overwhelmed?
Well, the whole thing about yearning to be overwhelmed by the divine, yes, absolutely. And I think that if you're going to be spiritual or feminist at the expense of a part of yourself, a part of your soul, it doesn't work. That it's the unity of the whole thing, the weaving of everything that you might desire and know and feel into the way you live your life.
And then before we reluctantly, you know, release you and people can cahoot with you at Open Secret, we will mention that again too. But there is a very fun, paragraph that I pointed out to you, page 237, you know, which is, you know, in which you mention me, which is adorable.
Oh, yeah.
But then you go on to, you know, a beautiful thing, just that wonderful paragraph or two, if you want to read that.
I'd like to, those of you who read this novel will meet Caroline Casey, mentioned a couple of times in this novel. So here we are. We're in San Francisco. Character has returned to San Francisco. I listened to late night radio with clay in my hands. On KPFA, Caroline Casey told the airwaves, and this is a quote, entertain the possibility that you are an undercover agent parachuting down to this beautiful planet in its time of need. Astrology is a language that catalyzes your memory of your mission. I started wondering about my mission and whether my art would be pure expression or if I would return to teaching. Caroline Casey, who I would later meet at a solstice ritual in Petaluma, already felt like a friend from my inner circle. Her vision put me in touch with the core of my being. Toward the end of her program, she quoted Martin Luther King. I am convinced that the universe is under the control of a loving purpose. Behind the harsh appearance of the world, there is a benign power. I felt goosebumps traveling up my arms, one of my signals when something is true. Something about her words forced me to be honest with myself. I opened the skylight and listened to the ocean. Then I filled the tub with an herbal bath. Naked in the water, I relaxed into my intuition and asked if I had a soulmate. The voice of the water rippled with a quiet yes. I remembered that yes from the hikes in the coastal mountains, my favorite place for deja vu. Even though there had not been a whisper for many years, I remembered my Grandma Helen's promise. On the outside, there was no sign of a soulmate, but inside, I felt that someone was looking for me. As I sat in the bath with rose petals floating in the water, I had to listen to what my inner voice was telling me.
Yay. That's great. And did you write this after you were married?
Oh, no,
this
before.
Book? Aha. Did you know your beloved?
I wrote most of the book before I met Eric, but then all of a sudden cello music started weaving through, because quite honestly, I rewrote this book 20 times and I kept weaving and weaving and adding things. And one of my publisher's early complaints about an earlier version is that he felt that he couldn't tell the difference between the cat and the soulmate, and he wanted me to make it very clear. And the truth is, I didn't really know until I met Eric. I've learned so much from him. And it
cool.
all
so
went into the novel.
We look forward to book three. So tell people again that you are reading, and Eric Ivins, your sweetheart, will be playing cello and many wonderful things at Open Secret. At what time?
It'll be
September 12th. When?
7 p.m. Friday, September 12th, and at Bookshop West Portal in San Francisco on Tuesday, September 9th, 7 p.m.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. We're going to play a little bit of Eric Ivins' music as our break music, and thank you very much, Diane Frank.
And here we are.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are at part two of our adorable. This is actually the 18th anniversary of this show, whose motto for 18 years has been, to compost colonialism and to participate in, reverent renaissance rising from the rubble. Is our manner of relating an offering, la la la, or an imposition? There was a fascinating article recently, Wolves Cooperate, Dogs Submit, going, and it's very interesting, going, we've bred dogs to lose their autonomy and to be more aggressive. Wolves cooperate, colonialism everywhere. But more than perfectly, our second half wonderful guests for Earth Eros. We segue to Cassandra Ferreira, a longtime ally, fellow Earth-based wise woman, constellator of community, fellow astrologer, guide to where everybody should live, and Rachel Kaplan, author of Urban Homesteading. We will give out those websites. I've had the book Urban Homesteading on my desk for years, and now I'm finally opening it. Anyway, welcome so much, Cassandra.
Hi, Caroline. Thanks for having me back.
Pleasure. And welcome, Rachel Kaplan.
Hi, Caroline. Nice to be here.
That's wonderful. So I was charmed again by your communications, Cassandra, going, we have urban-homesteading.org, and the course that you and Rachel are creating, 13moon collaborative.com. Yes, ISIS, rah, 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 the real ISIS, goddess of nature. Because I think you said backstage in one of your missives, Cassandra, that permaculture, good, but still very kind of Marsy boys thing. Is that,
Well, it can be, and there's a lot of really cute Marzi boys and men that I respect in permaculture very, very much, and many, many women, of course, too, that have been our teachers and collaborators. And there is still a sense that in our evolution, we're still in our heads a lot. Lots of permaculture courses are delivered in 2 weeks, and it's intensely inspiring and just pretty much mind-blowing, opens your world, inspires you so much, but kind of leaves you still in your head going, wow, that was a ride. And so what we conspired to do together with Delia Carroll and Kyra Auerbach, the four of us came together in a really just lovely collaboration to create a permaculture course that would take its time, that would really be an embodied experience of learning about natural rhythms, learning about the elements, learning about cycles, and aligning and in training and tuning ourselves over the course of a full 13 moon year in which we would be gathering during the darkening phase of the moon on one Saturday a month when, you know, that time of the moon when you're losing it because if you're not up so late, you don't see a rise anymore and it's heading towards new moon and you're like kind of losing that moon and it's such a potent time to go deep and to hold on to the thread of the rhythm. And so that's the place that we'll be gathering once a month for 13 moons in a permaculture journey that will be very balanced, although maybe a little bit more balancing in the sense that it'll be very feminine, very, like I said, instinctual, embodied.
So that's wonderful. So people sign up at the beginning, and you can tell us when the beginning is, and then they're in for 13 moons.
That's right. So one solar journey and 13 lunar journeys all together now.
Excellent. So when does it start, and how can tell our guests what's behind curtain number three, Cassandra? how can they join? What do they win? When does this start, and how can people sign up or telepathically participate?
Awesome. Yes, they can sign up on our website at 13moon collaborative.com. And so that's the name of the four of us as a teaching collaborative. And you can find out more about the course and read about how we've laid it out and learn about us and at our website. And you can also call us. There's a number there if you want to talk to somebody and email and get some good contact, any questions answered, of course. But we're starting this October 18th.
Yep.
So they can come see you at Bioneers on Friday night the 17th, and then they're going to have to miss one day of Bioneers. It's true, I know, but that was when we had to start it.
Well, it is Northern California is a prolific garden. It is a prolific garden going, ooh, and there's that, and there's that, and there's that. That's great. Again, everybody's own inner guide going, right, you know, Caroline Casey and Climbing Poetry, Friday, October 17th at Bioneers at 9 p.m. late so that people can make it there from all kinds of stuff. And then the next day, whither shall each person's customized moon guide them? And Rachel, I'm so delighted. Let's think of this as part one, because you have produced this huge, invaluable, fabulous thing, urban homesteading, heirloom skills for sustainable living. It is so wonderful, and you've been gardening around urban environments for over 15 years, although I got this book so long ago, it might be longer now, to a bicoastal family of farmers and gardeners, and working alternatively as a somatic psychotherapist. Cool. Writer, teacher, permaculture designer, activist, and mother. Two master's degree, not just one, but two, in multidisciplinary art and the other in counseling psychology, written and edited books, including The Probable Garden of Eden. Yes, where Lilith can come back, I guess. And you live in Northern California with your partner. You also have found true love. And daughter on your little homestead, visit urban-homesteading.org for more information. Wonderful. Thank you, Rachel. And can we think of this as part one, and then we will have you back when I've read at least half of your book?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
Oh, that's
absolutely
wonderful. That is wonderful. And as always, Cassandra is the guide to many great things. Going, thank you, Cassandra, for guiding me to. That's right. I think I got your book in 2011, and it really has been on the top of my shelf. Going, I gotta call Rachel sometime. But it's Cassandra who made it happen. There we go. So you say.
Well, it's still timely. You know, it's still a solution focused way of being that still has a lot of play. So we can talk about urban homesteading anytime and how people can true their lives up to the ethic of sustainability and simple living, because it's now more than ever a really great idea.
Yes, and I would say, you know, just even from divinatory perusal, going, ooh, what a great book. What a great book, because you have so many before and after pictures, too. Oh,
yeah, it's pretty.
And I do just want to do a shout-out to John Schaefer, who's about to come out with his revised Guide to Solar Living, which is also equally amazing, prodigious, you know, work. And so we have urban homesteading, heirloom skills for sustainable living, and then this other huge thing that John Schaefer's about to emerge. I just blurbed it.
And there's a chapter on urban homesteading in that solar living source book that I provided partly from the urban homesteading book. So I collaborated with them on a chapter for that book.
Oh, so he didn't write the whole thing?
No, I wrote that chapter.
Excellent. That's how we get...
They sourced it from lots of different people.
That makes sense. No wonder. Yes, yeah. Community writing a book. Okay, I'm a little less...
A lot simpler.
And amazing. So, well, that's fabulous. So it is all very to and fro. But yes, you know, Rachel, I love this dedication to the 13 Moon Collaborative with Delia Carroll. And who is the other wonderful person? Again, it's Cassandra, you, Delia Carroll.
There's a woman named Kyra Auerbach, and it's her, she lives in Occidental, and it's on her little eco-village land that we're going to be running the PDC. So that's the place where people are going to get to go and learn, and it's a very beautiful home site with beautiful orchard and water and things growing everywhere and people and children and animals wandering around. So it seems like a very fertile, beautiful garden for us to be working in.
Yeah, and so when people arrive, the first moon. Okay, so you're gathering on the. Remind me, the phase of the moon on October 18th will be.
It'll be the waning moon.
The waning moon, when traditionally people gather to determine the course of culture, and you know, again, do this wedding of humans with the garden. We go, oh, that's great. And then just for the fun of our perfect cahooting, now we have Pluto, underworld, soil. Next to the moon right now, trining the sun in Virgo, the power of pragmatic mysticism. You know, so it is the gathering of women, and the gathering of women within everybody, regardless of temporary gender assignment,
right.
You know, right now. So how would you like to and fro, both of you, to kind of guide us into a little bit of what happens on the first day? Because, I mean, we know, you know, Starhawk and many people, and Starhawk was doing permaculture in Gaza, bless her heart, and many extraordinary things. And I go, oh, I'd like to do that. Here I am, ancient person, not even knowing exactly, although I have many permaculture allies. So, and I go, I want somebody to show me, go here, take this, start here. There we go. A little inch by inch, life's a cinch. Yard by yard, life is hard. So what is even a first step? What will be people doing on October 18th, literally or telepathically, like myself?
Can I say, Cass? Can I go for it? So one of the things that was really important to us, one of the things that's really important about permaculture is it's really a science about relationships and about the relationships of different elements in our landscapes. But what often gets neglected is the actual human relationships between the people who study permaculture and who work together. And often the human capital doesn't get kind of invested in. So what we want is to really prioritize in the very beginning the formation of the group and the creation of the conditions that make all sorts of different relationships possible between people and themselves, people and one another, people and the land, people and the animals and the waters. And so a primary focus in the beginning is really to help us you know, connect to the land where we are, but also to who's in the group. So the group is really important for us. And another really important part of what we're sort of meditating on and putting forth is this idea of centering in the mystery. What does it mean to really give ourselves over to the unknown and to the unfolding mystery of the universe that we're part of? Part of our what we see in permaculture a lot is that there's a lot of really beautiful, pragmatic, accessible, simple solutions, and people get right down to doing more stuff. And that's good in some ways, but some of the problems people have is that we just keep doing and doing and doing and doing and doing without any grounding in our own sensations, our histories, our lineage, what backs us up, where we're moving forward to, our intentions. So we're trying to give people that through line from, I don't know how to say it other than being centered in the mystery of ancestry, the mystery of forward momentum, the mystery of the present, so that we can make good, wise, grounded choices about what we do with our lives. So those are really important elements for us.
They're
kind of mystical, you know. It's not the same as like we're going to hook up a gray water system, which we will do probably in week six or month six or seven. It's more going to be like, how do we connect to the land? How do we learn to listen? How do we listen to each other? How do we listen to ourselves?
But there's no mandatory sharing, right? Turn to the person on your left and tell them
you
keep
have
a circuit.
To do any of that.
That's very important to me. That's right. I don't share and I don't process. So centering in the mystery, yes. I mean, the sun in Virgo, micro, ruler of ritual magic. Everything we do is, you know, is powerful. Opposite Neptune, we are here to, again, say you can be an intellect and a mystic. You can be a specific person. So that's wonderful. And then what would that look like? I mean, I did spend a million years ago summer at Fintorn, where it was very wonderful working in the garden, certain principles laid out, and wherever one gathered at the garden or the weaving studio, there would be, you know, okay, everybody hold hands and invite in the presiding spirit, originating impulse, you know, behind when did this ever start, you know, weaving, when did this ever start gardening, and invite that in. And that was always, you know, pretty much always really useful. So when you say, you know, centering in the mystery, so what do people do with their hands on day one, on October 18th, going, put your hands, because we now know putting your hands in dirt is all kinds of good bacteria that keep us alive, and of course it makes sense in all these things. It's amazing how much we've forgotten. So people are going to put their hands in the dirt, or how, Cassandra?
They will do that. There's ethics and principles that permaculture is rooted in. There's the ethics of people care and earth care and fair share, and we try to true up all of our actions so that they're aligned with those values. But there's also principles that we use to help organize our choices about how we design our lives and our landscapes. And so we're going to, and there are all these little koans that were created by these guys who are credited with quote-unquote founding permaculture. We love these guys, David Holmgren and Bill Mollison, but we don't know if they really invented permaculture, since it's really deep indigenous lineage that we have in permaculture. But there's ideas like the first principle is to observe and interact with your landscape. And there's another principle that says design from pattern to details. So they're very simple but really deep when you drill down into them. And they have applications for, like, how we deal with the external landscape, but also the inner landscape. So we're going to give people time to actually go out on the land and find examples of those principles already operating without us doing anything. Just like a treasure hunt, really. Like, we're going to see where some of these principles are already up and running, and some of the things that we're going to study, the different elements of the permaculture design, which are water and air and slope and sun and animals and trees and plants. Like, how are they already doing their thing? So we're really observing and interacting a lot on that first week. It's really this foundational opening.
And I love, you know, Carl Jung, in one of his letters to somebody who just acquired land, he said, oh, this will really heal your depression. The chthonic earth spirits love nothing more than to be wedded to the artfulness of humans in gardening. And we go, oh, that's very good. So I always love that. And right now I'm engaged in just clearing paths and herding the rats north out of my yard. So it's not really, but I have worm farm. You know, slowly inch by inch. And then also maybe you both can guide us all. I have always loved, you know, from hanging out in the, you know, the Northern California community of people dedicated to that, going, I'll take it mythologically. You know, that all natural facts, social strategy, metaphors, you know, so again, slowing water down, you know, it infiltrates faster. I love that. Do you have a favorite natural fact that you both either love to kind of inhale as a guiding principle?
The
one that I carry with me is slow down to speed up, you know, and that's when it was the farmers in Occidental who said all of your metaphors are facts, and that was like, ooh, I love that, you know. And then working with the Women's Congress and everything, going, you know, let's honor our metaphors, because people are like, we have to really make this concrete, and I go, no, not really concrete, which is why we compost things. We're not going to fight things, we're going to compost things. I aspire to be more increasingly, of course, authentic, meaning, you know, actually permaculture knowledgeable. I want to come train with you both, but always teasing forth, going, right, you know, to protect wolves, become more like wolves, to honor water, to become more like water. And so
The one that comes
Caroline,
to me is... go ahead, Cass. Yeah, you go.
Yeah.
Okay, just riff on that a little bit. You know, we're going to be exploring the elements through the course. It's going to be weaving through, and then certain whole days will be dedicated to an entire element. And we'll take that element, and we'll be looking at both how we'll be looking outside of our bodies in the natural world with our eyes, looking at observing the way fire, heat, energy behaves, and realizing how much we actually know about it. Heat rises. Okay, that's right. What do we do with that? How do we work with that? I mean, there's basic strategies that if we gave ourselves permission to realize that with our own senses, we can notice what's actually going on, and then turn that awareness into our bodies and go, oh my gosh, I'm noticing that heat actually rises in my body too. And when I've got something going on and anxiety in my belly, oh my gosh, look at the way my face gets red and I, you know, and the heat rises up to my head. And there's ways that it's easy to see that we are nature doing exactly what nature does, and we just have lost our deep sensory ability to notice this. And then to make choices based upon that awareness. You know, one of our great teachers, Bach Dolman, tells us about water in nature, how to slow it and spread it and sink it in our landscapes. And then, you know, we learn from our Ayurvedic teacher here, Deanna Batdorf, how to slow and spread and sink water in our bodies using Ayurveda as the permaculture of the human body. So there's what I am hoping for all of us, the teachers and all the facilitators and all the participants, is that through the course of the year, we, all of us, take risks to become like children again who can interact with and notice the elements both inside our bodies, outside our bodies, and how it's all interfacing, and realize how much we know and can trust that we know, not with our heads necessarily, but more with our belly brains and, you know, with that gut instinct, and remember that we have instincts that we can learn how to trust again, and that we can not only design our landscapes from those instincts of permaculture as our guide, but also just how we're moving through our lives. How like, do you just drink a ton of water and gush it through your body and pee it all out? No, you actually, there are things that we do in our bodies to slow the water down, and it actually absorbs into our cells. Like, we're going there. Like, we're gonna take these elements all the way.
So I like it. So how do we slow, deepen, how do we sink water in our bodies or our gardens?
Well, it's interesting because in it's not always the same strategy, right? Like, the insides of a digestive system are different than how water is falling. Although there are many principles that apply in both directions, but a lot of it has to do, where it's similar, it has to do with like the fertility and the absorbency of the soil. So if you're looking at our gardens, we're wanting, you know, a soil quality that we tend over years of composting and promoting all of the little microorganisms to be doing the work for us. We promote a soil that knows how to absorb and hold, retain water, and then of course working with slope and other techniques so that that it naturally retains. Well, in our digestive systems, you can think of that as our inner soil that we're composting with all the food that we're eating and the drinking, and just layer upon layer. And how do we actually cultivate the inner soil of our digestive systems with the right use of healthy fats and salts and time of day and lemon and all these great techniques to actually increase the absorbency, to work with the microorganisms of our inner soil to slow down that water and help solve this massive problem of dehydration that we're all walking around with. Most of us are very dehydrated, and we've just adapted to deal with it, but not necessarily very well. And so it's not just about guzzling more water. If you pour a bunch of water on soil that doesn't know how to absorb it, it's flash floods and it doesn't absorb. Same thing happens in our bodies. So how do we slow down, pay attention. And there are many masters and teachers all around us that we'll be drawing from and to help us understand how to do this.
Cool. So,
oh, Cassandra, I can't wait.
I know. I want to go.
Wow.
Oh, can you move me to California by October 16th,
yeah.
Cassandra? I don't
once
know.
A month. You would just have to come once a month. We would put you up.
Oh, well, that's a thought. You know, well, who knows? Yes, it's experiment. It's a highly fluctuating field, isn't it? You know, I mean, it really is. Like, whoa, I wonder, you know, because there's so much magnetizing, and I love that you both are, you know, dedicated to and to addressing also drought. It's like San Luis Obispo, you know, where the whole lake, a 1,000-acre lake, is gone, and so the native people there are doing vertical permaculture, using less water. And we go, oh, okay, ingenuity.
Right.
Okay, so we have the water, and I want to speak with you both forever for a long time. At some point, may it be so. Going, okay, and then yes, all right. So we do not follow the pizza with beer. That's ineffective. May all people be released from that deadening reality police trick. Although, you know, okay, sometimes. But what does make our body more receptive to water? You were bringing that up, Cassandra, but I was like what? Like drinking lemon water in the morning? Like what? I mean, what makes our body hydrate, you know, aside from drinking water?
Well, salt. Having the right kinds of salt in your body. So it's like salt is not just salt across the board, right? So like we're learning, it's a whole changing field in the world of food, right? Like you can't just call salt or oil. Like you got to know where this stuff is coming from, and it all has different qualities. And so Atlantic gray salt, for instance, is especially hydrating.
Uh-huh.
If you drink water with some Atlantic gray in it.
Or Celtic.
And other salts are hydrating too, but I just know that one is actually a bit of a wetter salt, and so it actually is a wetter, producing.
But is it also known as Celtic gray salt?
I know much about salt, but I'm definitely not a bona fide salt expert. And there is Celtic salt, there is Atlantic salt, there are salts from all over the world,
and
with
there's
all
pink
sorts
salt.
Of different
yes.
qualities and tastes. There's pink salt, there's black salt, there's gray salt, there's so many kinds of salt. And so I am a student of salt and learning how to use salt to rehydrate my body.
Yeah.
And also to with essential fatty acids, like really good healthy oils, help your body if you're eating them well.
Like
they help
coconut, like olive, like what?
Yeah, but raw. So
raw,
like don't cook with the olive oil, you know, cook your veggies in water and then pour the olive oil on top of it afterwards to flavor it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, using, and there's a whole bunch of different oils that we can be using, that depending upon your constitution, right? So this is not a health class. Like we'll cover as much as we can that makes sense within the concept of our bodies as permaculture
landscape.
Okay,
we're way too soon. This is like a trailer, and we will both reconvene. You know, all of us. You know, Rachel Kaplan, Urban Homesteading, and Cassandra Farah, and their wonderful course. But also just wanted to throw to you either one. But Rachel. Biochar as a way of honoring fire in a way that is good for the earth. Is that a friend of yours?
You know, I don't know enough about biochar to really speak about it. I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Okay, we will bring to other people. And then just on our way out, oh beautiful team, and more, we will do more. We dedicate to this because it is so worthy and it is part of our renaissance. I love what you're both doing. Any blessing you want to waft out to world, Cassandra? A short blessing, and then we'll pass it to Rachel. Going, may all people, you know, put their hands in the dirt or whatever.
Yeah, may all people remember their cyclical and elemental intelligence.
Ah, very wonderful. Do you want to there's poker blessing poker to you, Rachel. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, one of the beautiful permaculture ideas that helps me so much is to remember that in the problems lies the solution.
Yes.
So we look at all these quote-unquote problems in the world, but embedded in them is is the answer we seek and the world we're trying to bring into being. So may people be aware of that and be creative and inventive and regenerative and act.
That is wonderful. Okay, Cassandra Farah and Rachel Kaplan, author of Urban Homesteading, urban-homesteading.org, and also 13moon collaborative.com. I aspire to see you both when I'm out there and to cahoot with you further and to have you both back on radio to dive even more deeply into this essential part of our lives. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
And thanks always to Erica Bridgman and Jonathan Cherry, a wonderful ally here in D.C., board op at the moment, standing in. He does everything. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and I'll be out in Northern California mid to late October doing many things. Woof, woof, woof.
Marine Task Force on the Americas will hold their annual dinner on Sunday, September 21st from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Marin, located at 240 Channing Way in San Rafael, California. Miguel Tinker Salas, a foremost authority on political and social issues confronting Latin America, will speak about U.S.-Latin America relations in the 21st century. Award-winning singer and songwriter Reed Frommer will perform. This is a benefit for the Marin Task Force on the Americas. For more information, call 415-924-3227. That number again, 415-924-3227. This event is